you know, everyone else that they were working with was going from bottom up. We went from top down. We said, what are your big business goals? Who are you after? And what do you want to help them achieve?
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Jeremy from the Off Quick Mail.io.
Hey, and this is Jack from emailsthatsell.com. Today,
interview. Hey, Jack, just before we start, I've been doing some thinking lately. You know, our podcast won't be legit until we have a sponsor, right?
Okay, but haven't we been turning down sponsors?
I know, but it's hard to recommend something you and I don't use often, and we're already promoting the crap out of our services.
Fair point, but what about the course we just released? Wouldn't you recommend that to our listeners?
Yeah, for sure I would. All right, so how would we start?
Well, for starters, I wouldn't mention that it took us over a year and three trips to Japan and Switzerland to record the thing.
All right, let's not do that. But at minimum, I would want to mention where they can find the course. Like, let's put it to, I don't know, course.quickmail.io. Would that work for you?
It works. And then I could share what a few of those early students had to say about it. Like the one from Damien, who said it was by far the best course on cold outbound I've ever taken. Or what did Chris say? The week on sales research and targeting prospects blew my mind. Yeah, we definitely want that in there.
Yeah, I like it. It's kind of too easy. You know, people always say nice things when they get results. And at some point, we're going to have to come up with some hard sales copywriting materials of our own. And you know, I'm not that great at that. So I don't know, what would you put on the page?
Okay, how about this? Imagine that instead of getting ignored by prospects day after day, you could just follow a course that shows you how to book meetings with dream clients and automate the entire outbound process so you can focus on closing deals and scaling your company. Plus, there's that money-back guarantee and the 8 modules and the bonus podcast interviews. But so far, so good?
Yeah, I like it, man. But you know, I like your style. So anyway, all right, it's getting a bit late. So can we podcast now and review that later?
Yeah, but at least promise me that course.quickmail.io is finally live and people can finally try out the course right now.
Yeah, sure. I already put it live, and just so you know, I added that special price we discussed about for our podcast listener, and then we can leave it here until, you know, we're happy with the landing page. Sounds fair enough?
Yeah, let's do it. Hi, guys. We have a special guest on the podcast today. He's Will. He's the founder of growthlabs.com. where you can go to get help with your copywriting and funnels done for you, and also a new business, contentdrivenbusiness.com, where you can get templates that'll help you figure out what works in the world of content marketing. Will, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on.
So look, I mean, we've all known each other. This is one of the few guests here that, I don't know, we're old pals. And we all come from the cold email space. So, Will, can you give our listeners a bit of a background on how you came to be, you know, this marketing behemoth that you are today?
Too kind, man. Yeah, sure. So the life story, or the short version, is that I was working in corporate IT. Absolutely hated my job. You know, I was pretty much just a human spreadsheet, just a human calculator, there every single day. Going through and just really, you know, really unfulfilled, feeling like I was wasting my life in corporate, looking at ways to get out of the 9-to-5 and kind of control my own destiny. I tried a whole bunch of different things, affiliate marketing, writing ads and websites for other people, and nothing really stuck until I started getting good at copy. The problem was I jumped a little bit too soon into the agency. I thought that was the model that would work for me, and it obviously is. But, you know, when I first started, I was really introverted, really shy, and just really struggled with the whole sales process. And upside was, because I got good at copy, I could actually get cold emails out to people and get them through to a point where it was much easier talking to them rather than cold calling or things like that. So that's how I kind of got into the space, doing it for myself. Had a few clients come through where the ads and stuff wasn't working quite as well for them. So they come through from other agencies. And they just approached me and said, look, you've got really good copy. We're going to work with you, but I don't want to do the ads anymore because I haven't been working. Why don't you try doing what you do for us? And so that kind of built the transition. And now, you know, 60, 70% of the work that we do is actually doing cold outreach for clients. The other part that we do is conversion optimization, copywriting, and some ads here and there, but mostly building funnels.
Will, how would you recommend someone starting a new agency today? Would you recommend they actually do the same route or path, or do you actually recommend they do something else?
Oh, dude, I've made so many mistakes. And definitely don't follow me. Look, I think today it's a little bit of a different space to where I was starting off. I think there's two sides to it. One is companies are actually more comfortable using agencies because there are so many agencies out there. But there's also so many goddamn agencies out there as well. So it's really competitive, right? I think they've got to look at the business model. So if it's the first thing they're doing to get out of a 9-to-5, that might not be a bad option because you only need a few clients before you can jump. But there's so much more to agency than a lot of the gurus talk about. Like guys are selling courses saying, you make 10 grand a month and you know just use my templates. It doesn't work that way. If you're running an agency today, you've got to have so much domain knowledge and actually be good at what you do, right? It's not like the old Wild West where you put an ad up, you get a few cents each click, and then you can just get results. Like you've got to be on top of your game. So agency might not be the best model today as well. It's also really hard to grow and scale. So we've kind of kept a boutique and we can only service a certain number of clients and we don't want to grow any bigger than that. And we've got content-driven business is the thing that we're trying to scale because we're having, you know, a hard time scaling the agency or don't really want to scale the agency. So
yeah. So it sounds like you may be steering people who are considering jumping to the agency world to, number one, hone their chops, right? Like don't just take money from some people and get paid to make mistakes on their dime. And I don't know, but it's cracked up to be, is there another business model that you're maybe more excited about? Maybe you could tell us a bit about content-driven business and sort of what that's set up to be.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. Agency, it's definitely got its ups and downs, right? Like I'm not hating on it because obviously it's what got me out of the 9-to-5. We're in a good space at the moment where I love every single one of our clients. They're awesome clients. And, you know, we've kind of gone for the rough end where you're fighting for the bottom of the barrel. You're not charging enough. Like we're in a pretty comfortable position, but it takes ages. Well, it takes a while to actually get here. So for someone starting it, they might want to turn around and say, look, is this, am I comfortable just eating dirt and just eating crap every single day of my life for the next 2.5-3 years until I build up my reputation? That's the question they've got to ask themselves. And if they've got any doubts, don't do it because it is a really hard business model. But that being said, I mean, there is a lot of freedom that comes with it. At this point in time, we were on a track to do 7 figures, but I didn't want to do that because it got really stressful. So we're kind of high 6 figures at the moment, super profitable, complete control over my life. Like if I want to put tools down for a week and just go and spend some time thinking or hang out with my family, that's possible. So it is a pretty good business in terms of lifestyle. But in terms of, you know, if you want a $10 or $100 million business, agency might not be the right model because it's just hard, really hard to grow. It's labor intensive.
Especially in the beginning, putting the team in place, right?
Yeah, there's so much stress that comes with having a good team. Yeah, it's hard to do.
How did you actually structure the team for providing some of the cold outreach?
I think we'll dive deep into this because I'm happy to share our processes, but there's 3 key elements, right, in terms of having the cold outreach. One of the most important ones for me is having the right people or having the right data for the people we want to reach out to. That's the most time-consuming part of it as well, but also where most of the value comes from. So I've got a core team based in the Philippines, and the entire job is to help myself and my clients find the right people, do a lot of deep research into them and collect the information the right way so we can process it. And also do the technical stuff and load the emails and stuff like that as well. So most of my team, well, actually 90% are actually based in the Philippines. And then I've got a couple of people locally to me. And, you know, so they help me manage everything. If we need design work, they come and do it. And then I've got a bunch of freelancers, contractors that I know do a really good job. And we just give them projects when we kind of need some help around that.
Did you make any mistakes hiring or anything you've learned?
Hell yeah, so many mistakes. So I think I learned by failing, right? I kind of hit against a brick wall going, oh crap, that kind of hurt. And then I pivot and try and get around the wall. So I had a really hard time at the beginning hiring people based overseas because I didn't have the right management processes and tools and experience to kind of make sure that the team worked. So one of the biggest things was knowing when to hire and also when to fire and having some kind of idea of, well, not having a set list of tasks. So for example, my first VA, it would be awesome having a VA. We're fairly successful now. I can pay someone, you know, $500 US. Let's just go and hire someone. But then they were sitting there looking at me going, all right, boss, what am I meant to be doing? And I was looking at them going, what can you do? And so it was just like clueless, right? Whereas now we've got really defined processes, job descriptions. It's kind of like hiring locally, but just overseas. That was probably the first mistake that I kind of made, just being too loose with hiring and then being too slow to fire the people as well. In terms of local stuff, I've made a whole bunch of mistakes. Like I haven't nailed that part yet, quite honestly. You know, with local teams, it's a struggle for me because the amount of money that I'm paying them, you know, it's actually a lot of money. And a lot of the times they're not the right people. So it really hurts the pocket. And then you've got to let them go and try and find the right people. I've just found what worked for me is to, instead of having a local role, take that role and split it into two or three different areas and hire individual people for those areas in the Philippines. That's how I kind of made it work so far.
Okay, so you have like specialists?
Yeah, exactly right. So we've got project managers. We have people who do Q&A, not question and answer. We look at quality of data. We've got QA people. We've got ops managers. We have people doing checking, content writers, editors. We're really specialized and we have each person in the right role.
Well, I have a question that comes up kind of frequently with, people who tend to reach out. I'm talking specifically about younger agency owners or people who are looking to start this agency thing. And they say, there's tools out there that can build lists for us. We don't need any, personnel to build lists. Maybe set them straight a little bit.
I haven't come across a tool that I've really liked in terms of data quality. Now, the problem is they're trying to shortcut a process that I feel like is such a big value point. Because the thing is, if you can just go and pay like $50 a month and get one of these tools and get a whole bunch of lists for it, everyone else in the world is paying for that list as well. So not only are you getting generic information, you're probably getting people on the list who have been hammered by 50 other people. And then, you just don't know when they update the list, if the data's accurate. Like, you don't have any control of the process. And I've never found success buying lists from other people or using one of these tools. I just haven't.
What's interesting is if you look at some of their tools, they'll tell you like industry reply rates based on, their data. And it's kind of impressive what they've been able to accumulate. But I mean, they'll say things like, reaching out to C-level in the education space has 2.5% reply rate. Therefore, if you buy 1,000 of our leads, you'll get 23 interested. Mm-hmm. And those are horrible, god-awful, shitty reply rates, right? But yet they tout it like, hey, it's easy. And I don't know. Right. If you're willing to just outsource the list building to a tool that is probably for the boutique agency, like people who are really doing a very good job at prioritizing data. So let's maybe boil this down. There's no shortcut to hiring a team and really just doing your due diligence before you reach out.
Yeah. I mean, and again, we can kind of talk about this later on, but we're seeing that there's so much more personalization you have to do with each and every single email. We can go into processes and stuff like that, but personalization is so important nowadays. But if you're just personalizing by like name and company name, everyone else is getting that kind of stuff too. You can't cut through the noise with that level anymore. So I think these tools are actually like 2.5% reply rate. If I'm getting that for my clients, we're turning around and going, dude, we stuffed up big time somewhere. Like, we're looking at each other going, holy cow, we get on it and fix this right
this
now.
Is not good. Exactly.
I would not be proud of 2.5%, to be honest.
Exactly, right. So let's talk personalization. Will, what are your favorite merge tags right now?
Good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. It depends from client to client. So when we look at every single person we put onto a list, we get so much information about that. And that's all manual labor. So for example, we have a client at the moment, they're in a certain space, right? And in that space, their clients publish a lot of publicly available information like sales data, team sizes, everything like that. So we actually get data points for every single lead or every single contact. And we reference, hey, I just saw that you did X amount last month. Congratulations. If I've got my figures right, if I've calculated this correctly, based on your team size and based on your sales, you're actually in this situation. I've got this idea for you that can get you to this other situation. So we really go deep with every single person.
And use it to craft your pitch at the end, right?
Exactly.
It's pretty cool. For us, I'm a big fan of the custom intro right now because it's displayed in the preview text of the email. So it's kind of nice to help out your open rate a bit by showing the prospects that you're mentioning or you're talking about something that they've probably in 2020 never seen in a cold email, potentially, right? Because I don't know. What do you think, Will? Is personalization mainstream yet? Or is this only for like the high quality?
It's not mainstream yet. I don't think it'll ever be. And the reason for that is people are lazy. Unless you're really, you love what you do and you want to be a master of your craft, it's just so much easier not to do that and just play the numbers game, which I really don't believe in.
That's a great question because at some point, you have the law of diminishing returns. So at some point, the economics won't work if they actually don't do any personalization. So there's always this balance between, what you mentioned, like, maybe being too lazy to actually do some extra work versus actually having something that works at all. That'd be interesting to see when that's tipping over.
Yeah, I think cold email in general has been viewed as this cheap marketing channel for startups, for freelancers, for anyone with a Gmail account, they can do marketing. And that comes with a lot of downsides. I think it's given the channel quite a bad rap because anyone from spammers to the kids still living in their parents' basement touting themselves as the next hot agency is using it. So, you know, the expression, the medium is the message. Like if it's sent through cold email, we sort of are fighting against the 10,000 other cold emailers that prospect has dealt with before. So given that personalization is now this potential, I don't know, new level for very high engagement campaigns where you're seeing double digit or, you know, 20% and beyond reply rates, are people going to be starting to invest in training others to do this? Like, or will we just see a separation between the good and the bad? Bad doesn't personalize, good does.
That's a good question. That's a good question. The caveat that I've got no freaking idea how it's going to go, I'm going to make a guess, right? I'm going to guess that people are always going to view doing this the right way a little bit too hard and almost too labor intensive. I think there's going to be a clear separation. I think the guy's doing a great job. They'll continue doing a great job. Like, you know, we'll continue adapting. We're constantly learning. So for example, I was reading the, you know, blog in Quickmail that I think it was about 6 or 7 months ago where we saw a huge drop in open rates and reply rates because we were using Google for everything, right? Yeah. And then reply rates dropped off a cliff and we're like, what the hell happened? So then as soon as we figured out, well, Google's got some new rules out, they're becoming a lot stricter. They're becoming too strict in terms of how it's being done. And then we read the blog and it's like, hey, you know, try Outlook. Immediately we switched and within a week we're testing Outlook. Now, the thing is, the agencies that don't bother putting the effort in, I saw so many agencies that are actually bigger than us who do cold emails and they're posting all these groups like, we're absolutely stuffed. We just can't get emails for anymore. I've lost like 80% of my client base. You know, I've got all this stuff to maintain. It's like, it kind of makes sense. But for me, like I'm looking at it going, it was so obviously coming. Like you only needed to pivot slightly and you could have survived and done better. But these guys just don't. Like they just don't invest enough in being masters of the craft. I think I just don't see how people were going to even bother investing when there's easier stuff for them. Like, oh, we can just go for up another ad.
You know, the funny thing is I think very few people, and by people, I mean, you know, business owners, actually die by being decapitated. They always die by a thousand cuts. So it's just, you know, oh, something's going bad, but it's okay, we'll deal with it. And then they keep on riding this thing until, you know, there is no more blood.
How do you stay sharp, Will? And I'll share my take, but I'm curious, like, how do you continue to develop the craft?
I think it's just keeping an open mind. So one of the things that I'm doing at the moment, so this is, we're recording this on a Friday. So on a Friday now, I actually, you know, don't respond to any emails. I don't get on the tool, so I don't write any copy. I literally have this time to learn and to explore and to think about things. So that's really been helpful for me. If you can't carve off an entire day, maybe even like just on a Saturday morning. But what I do is I'll look at and think about results of the past 6 months and go, what are our open rates? What are our reply rates doing? Are they going up? Are they going down? Are they steady? And think about why that might be. And then I've got sources that I read. So Quickmail blog, obviously. Jack, when we had, you know, when we were talking every week a while back, it was really good to bounce ideas off you as well. And just having a few trusted sources of knowledge and also data and just seeing what's happening out there and, you know, hearing from other people, but also doing your own experiment.
Well, yeah, that's helpful. So find your sources and check in regularly.
What's yours, Jack?
So I love this podcast, but I don't listen to any podcast, but, you know, this is old news to, I guess, everybody listening is there's some good stuff out there, you know? So I'll go to listennotes.com, I think it is, and I'll type in cold email and I'll check out like the top episodes that are mentioning cold email and the topic just to see like what's new on the horizon here. But really a lot of the learning that goes on is through troubleshooting within our own campaigns. So I would say, you know, if deliverability comes up as a hot topic, which it certainly has, I guess this is sort of something that the listener won't be able to always take away. But, you know, when we have deliverability issues, I love reaching out to deliverability experts and inviting them on the podcast and say, hey, let's talk about it. We had Tim Jenkins from SendGrid give us some good takeaways. And so it's always nice to be able to, if you can't invite them on your own podcast, pay them for consulting to figure out, you know, if they are the expert in that domain. Let them bring you up to speed very quickly, I find is a pretty well worthy where place to put your money. That makes sense. And then the final place that I go to for inspiration is some of the classics that were written before I was born. David Ogilvy, John Carlton, Gary Halbert. Yeah. You know, like I like to refresh on the old stuff to make sure my copywriting is well-oiled and performing at its peak. I don't know. Jeremy, what do you got?
My one may surprise you, but it's actually hiring people so I can actually have the mental space of doing something else. I have my Wednesday, actually. Will's got his Friday. I got my Wednesday. I do like to have high-level thinking, but it's very difficult when we are too close to the business. And so I do need to hire more people so I got a bit more space. Usually, I learn things from two ways. The first one is to by hearsay. You know, some of my users having problems and I go investigate and then check out, or some other users are doing super well and I go investigate as well. And sometimes by, just looking at the data, you know, on how QuickMail is behaving, you know, what's going on. Do we get a lot of replies? Do we not get and things like that? You know, when you mentioned like a team from SendGrid, who now is not working at SendGrid anymore, but he came like, 2 years ago on a cast, and he was one of the first one to speak about like email engagement, where at that time, deliverability was not even a problem, you know. So that's kudos to him, you know, and the world had picked up. Yeah.
Yeah, very true. So for those of you tuning in, maybe for the first time to the show, email deliverability has to do a whole lot about the engagement that you get from the people you send emails to. Do they open? Do they click? Do they reply? So you can check out other episodes about that.
Oh, one thing I wanted to add about, you know, you were mentioning the open rate just recently, and I've been fooled by my own product. It's a funny story. Is I actually put a sort of like auto warmer in place, like recently, like last couple of weeks. And there's one thing I haven't done yet, which is auto archiving the message that are being sent. And one of the mechanisms behind it is not to actually give any hint that this is a warm-up email to the recipient. Unless you open it, you look at the end and at the signature, there's mentioned like, hey, you know, this is auto-warmed by QuickMail kind of thing. But I get fooled all the time by my own sort of like subject line. And that really starts to really annoy me. So really, I'm going to have to, you know, to do the auto-archive. But you know, I'm a tough cookie, right? And so and I still get surprised by some of the subject line. I think one of the reasons for it is because I'm using as a source of text, I'm using my own book on cold email. So I actually use my whole source of my book and I use that as a sort of like scrambling tool to actually get stuff.
And so freaking smart.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that I think I get always like, huh, what's that? You know, like for half a second every time. And I'm like, shit, you know, I've been fooled again. And it's just because it's not normal. It's not the thing I expect. I got words like mashed up all together, some sentence. They kind of make sense, but it's kind of awkward. You know, I don't know. It's like, I don't know, UTM gives great open rates. And it's just like, what the hell? You know, and it's just like weird mix of sentence. And I should send you some of them that are like really funny, actually.
So it basically pulls your curiosity in because it's a mix of keywords around the cold email space?
No, I think the point I want to make is that it's different. And I think different is what, you know, attract attention. And it's not your typical, like, you know, things you expect from people doing cold email. And when you're actually doing personalization, I think you reach that point where the human brain has to kick in and then say, is that really an email that is genuine or I want to read? And I think that's important. One small story that is very funny on this one is one of my clients actually forwarded me one of those auto warmer emails. And he say, Jeremy, you've got pornography, you know, in your title. Really? And I looked at my book and there is actually the can spam actor has been built to prevent pornography on marketing. And so I got rid of the word, but I thought that was funny. Anyway, it did open the email, so I guess it worked.
It's funny, but you know, when you said it, but if you're getting curious about your own cold emails, then if you're obviously doing something right, with your goggles on, if you actually get curious about it, imagine someone who's not expecting an email like that, right? It's like, oh my God, what is this?
Yeah, we should do an auto-generator of random, you know, subject lines.
So I hate to derail this, Jeremy, that is really impressive that you built a bot that makes even you interested to open up a cold email. That's another cast. And please, we should make that another
We
cast.
Should make one, definitely.
We will. Okay, but we've got some great, I don't know, cold email minds on the call. I got to check in with a very dated topic, and that's how many follow-ups should we be sending? Because now I'm starting to rethink things, and Will, I would love for you to weigh in on it, but maybe, go ahead. I want to hear where you're at on like number of follow-ups, and then I'll share some.
And in fact, if you could also extend to globally what you've learned, you know, that is working at the moment, I think that'd be great.
Cool, for sure.
Yeah, look, I think that's such a good question. And it's one of those things that we're testing constantly. So at the moment, typically on a campaign, we're still at about 5 to 8 follow-ups. So, you know, most campaigns for us would have 6 to 9 emails in total. And the reason why we're still at that level is because a few of my clients have actually landed some pretty substantial deals on the 7th and the 8th emails. So that's kind of why we still do it. I think there's two ways of looking at it. One is return on investment. One is the actual numbers, right? If you look at it from a return on investment viewpoint, I think it's still better to have more emails. From the viewpoint of unsubscribers, people opening it, obviously the more you send and the more they get used to you and know that not the right message for them, the less your numbers or the worse your numbers look. But ultimately for me, the biggest metric or the number one metric, you know, our North Star metric for everything we do is return on investment. So in that sense, I'm not ready to start narrowing it down yet. We might do a few tested campaigns with our own marketing where we try and make it smaller and make it more concise and see how we go. But you know, we're still getting responses at later stage emails. So for me, it still looks like it's working.
Yep. Cool. And Jeremy was asking about what's working now. I don't know if you wanted to touch on that before I shared some follow-up ideas.
Yeah. So we've got some major strategic changes that we're testing. So one of the things that we were testing at the moment, which I think will work really well, but I don't have enough data to confidently say yes or no yet. Instead of pushing them to a phone call, which we typically do for most of our clients, we push them through to a quiz. So there's another software piece called LeadTalk that we use. And instead of getting people to go, hey, can we have a phone call? It's like, why don't you self-identify what problem you've got, you know, and compare yourself to the rest of the market? And once you go through this quiz, now we've got all this data about you as well. And it's not just surface level where it's like, all right, let's have a call where, and we need 15 minutes to figure out if you even have this pain. It's like, no, we know exactly where you're at. So then when you jump on the phone, we can tailor the conversation and also make it more meaningful by bringing the right solutions in. So that's one thing we're testing.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I imagine if you can get someone to take a quiz, they'll very likely accept a phone call meeting too, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm finding, I mean, it's looking really positive so far. So we've rolled out campaigns for a couple of weeks. So I'm not going to go out there and say, this is what you've got to do, but
yeah,
it's
looking
positive
sure.
So far. I think this is such a lower barrier to entries. It's not like, oh man, I'm going to be on the phone. Someone's going to pitch me for like 15 minutes. It's really curiosity driven because a lot of the copy we're writing and the angles are like, you know, we built this diagram or chart on how the rest of the market is doing or what the top performance in your market is doing. Fill out the quiz and we'll show you on the chart where you actually land. So people are like, oh, that's really cool. All right, let's just go for and traffic this stuff out. And so that, you know, we're getting really good open rates, really good click-throughs, and people are actually using the quiz really, really well. And the conversations we're having on the back end of it is so much stronger than just a phone call that's come from nowhere.
I think that's brilliant.
I love it.
That's tough to top because, you know.
No, dude.
But if the answer comes in on the quiz and if people are engaging with it more, I mean, yeah, this could be, you know, the future or the next decade or so. So kudos for that. That sounds great. My thinking in terms of follow-up stems from this recent curiosity or obsession I have with deliverability. And here's sort of how the thinking goes. Jeremy, like you had mentioned, engagement has a whole lot to do with our open rates and deliverability. So I'm starting to think that there may be a cost associated to a deeper follow-up sequence. And taking that with a bit of the lessons from 80-20 principle, it really kills me to not send a 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th touch. I mean, because I have seen those like deals come through on an 11th touch limerick that was sent out to prospects as a Hail Mary. And like, you know, that was like a great day for us. But what I'm thinking today is I would rather maintain, you know, let's say a 60% open rate across campaigns and just have like a really freaking good 1, 2, 3, 4 part campaign with lots of personalizations and the right frequency. But look, I mean, I hear you, man. I hear you. And we're experimenting to see if we're on the right track or not. That said, what's working for cold email for us, I'm seeing some benefit to bringing in the LinkedIn network into the campaign. So one thing we're doing is like, sort of like a second degree campaign where we'll find the right folks at the right companies and are in, they have a mutual connection on LinkedIn somewhere. And if it's a meaningful connection, mentioning that in the email has been shown to break the ice quite a bit and, you know, give us a nice merge tag to be able to use to stand out. So time will see if it's about the three follow-ups, but you know, so far that's what's going on.
It's often a trade-off.
I'm actually
Between, you know, your return on investment, the level of engagement for your deliverability, and also the time, you know, because sometime if you had sent the email like 2 months later, then that would have been the right moment, you know, to contact them.
Yeah, time is everything.
Yeah. Hey, Will, I'm curious. I'm going to switch gear a little bit here. I've seen you speaking to a lot of events about marketing. What are some of the things that you're talking at those events, some secret sauce that you want to share with your audience?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I think 80% of the talks that I give is actually on cold emails because I think that's stuff that people are so curious about and everyone assumes that it doesn't work. Yes. I recently did. So it's kind of like trying to break everyone's beliefs and, you know, it's a good curiosity point. But I did one recently with James Tremco, who I know at James's event. The topic was marketing agency secrets. I was like, dude, I have no idea what the hell to talk about. So, but you know, I kind of went into looking at some of the stuff we're doing, not necessarily on cold emails alone, but across all different types of campaigns, ads, funnels, and things like that. Looking at trends across marketing. So some of the things that, you know, that I kind of covered with that was, one was like just having more story-based emails. So this is talking about warm emails, more story-based, more emotive, taking the same principles that we use for cold emails, you know, writing really, really good emails with personality that engages, applying that concept, but giving ourselves some more space to write with as well. So that was really cool. Again, showing some of the results we've had for a warm email sequence. You know, some of the other stuff we're talking about is how to increase conversions on landing pages and stuff like that. We had a client recently, you know, they're doing 12 million a year at the moment. We took one of their product lines and tripled sales in like 30 days. So we're doing that for every single product line. So by the time we finish, it'll be like a $30 million business, which is pretty cool. Sharing some of the, like the test points and stuff around that.
So how the hell do you do that, right? Yeah. I mean, like what's the first step to tripling a conversion rate here?
Yeah. So, okay, let's kind of go into that because that gives me a bit of substance to talk about. I think the way that we look at it, right, there's different levels of looking at marketing. And a lot of people start from platform optimization or thinking about platform marketing campaign level at the very bottom, which is like, if I use this picture in this campaign versus this other picture, what's the result? That's the very lowest level, but it's the level that most other agencies play at. Like, hey, let's just do some copy tests. Let's just do some ad tests, right? The one above that is platform specific. So you've got campaign on top of that's platform. Platforms like, how do we maximize Facebook as a platform to get results? Do we do lead ads, do we retarget? What do we do on the platform specifically? Above that, you've then got channel. So it's like, well, what's the right channel? Is it Facebook? Is it Google ads? Is it, you know, is it buying ads or doing JVs? Like what's the channel that we're focusing on? And above that, that's when you look at the integrated marketing, which is overall, like what's our goal with this marketing? So with this client, what we did was, you know, everyone else that they were working with was going from bottom up. We went from top down. We said, what are your big business goals? Who are you after? And what do you want to help them achieve? And based on that, we could actually have a few new angles that they've never tested before and approach the copy in a way that resonated with the audience a lot better than going up and just testing different graphics. So we did that, took one of their products, applied that thinking, and we changed the opt-in page or we changed the landing page, did all the copy, did different graphics, applied it to the emails, wrote the stories, and then just split tested crazy, but at the right levels. So yeah, essentially like go for that whole process. We tripled one of the products and we'll do it for the other five products that they have as well.
That's crazy. Are you using a lot of video in your funnels?
Something that we're testing. It depends on the platform. It depends on the audience as well. So we, for every single campaign and funnel that we do, we test videos versus non-videos.
Any results yet?
For younger audiences, so having videos there is actually really, really good. For older audiences, it's a bit of a mixed bag in terms of what you're trying to sell them, the price point, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Generally, you know, as an overall trend, I think videos are definitely here to stay. We're getting better results, but it does come back to audience. Like, you know, we can talk about market generalizations, but if you've got the wrong audience for it and they don't consume video or they don't like to consume video or they're on the wrong device, it can really, you know, really stuff up a campaign. So we kind of look at it case by case basis.
Yeah, well said. It's not like just grab the hottest marketing thing and apply it to your business and it's going to work, right? But yeah. but I will say one thing that I didn't view video as, probably because my background's as a, you know, I'm the email guy. Like, that's my channel. I don't like to move away from it very often. It's like, I don't know, a koala eating eucalyptus. That's all I do. I'm right here all day, you know? So we had Nathaniel Bibby come on the show. He's British, but he lives in Perth. So not too far, sort of, I guess it is. Anyways, one thing he said stood out was like, you know, I was at the airport and somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, yeah, you're that guy from those LinkedIn videos. Let me buy you a coffee." And he started thinking, he was like, you know, when I just did like text, it's like nobody would come up to me and say, "Hey, you're that guy." But he's like, when we do video, it just helps to humanize things. And he's finding it to be a much quicker way to build a deeper relationship, which, I don't know, maybe it's why we're recording this and hopefully doing something worthwhile with content, but I don't know.
Yeah, if you're looking at approaching someone organically and adding value, video is amazing. So again, coming back to James Framco, he's got a whole bunch of numbers and stuff in terms of what he does with video and cut through and the results. And it's just amazing the stuff that the results that he's getting just by doing videos, not even running ads to it, just for video. So it's definitely a strong platform.
I got another question for kind of both of you. When you're working with a new client, obviously every client got a certain amount of content. How much of that content do you actually sort of like reuse versus, you know, starting from scratch or resuming everything?
Jack, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I'll take this. So we have to be careful with repurposing content in cold email. I find that, and marketers, I'm going to pick on you for a moment. If I'm speaking with a marketer and they're saying, "Hey, here's the one pagers, the PDFs, the videos that are converting like crazy on their website, use these." They usually are fast to think about linking to them in the cold email and hoping that the prospect will click a link and then settle in to digest, I don't know, you know, a couple hundred words on that one pager. And I think that's the wrong mentality for outreach. I mean, Jeremy, it's no surprise we use cold email to generate conversations, not necessarily even to qualify people, although Will, that quiz idea you have is like, yeah, like blowing my mind. It may be the golden goose here. But when I ask a client about, okay, let me see some content, I'm really talking VP of sales, let me see your deck. And then I tell them, at what moment when you're presenting, do your most of your prospects say, "Okay, I get it now. Show me those two slides. I want to see like the big light bulb moments." And usually it's, you know, the perfect topic for your first and second emails. Like, these are the selling points that you are doing a disservice to this client if you don't come right out the gates putting it in front of the prospect's nose, and so that they really know how their life will be better by engaging with this email. So salespeople have content already innately figured out. That said, there's a reason why marketing content performs well, converts well. And usually it's just taking a few snippets, like mini case study. Okay, you did this for this group in this many months. Okay, boom, I'm adding that to cold email.
I kind of come across this a lot as well, where some of my clients will turn around and go, "Look, we've got this case study. We know if we get it in front of the right people, they'll come through and buy." But it's like, you know, a 200-page case study. Like, no one's gonna sit down and read that. Like, come on.
We're not talking mini here, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that idea of having a pitch deck and stripping out that information is really good. One of the things that I think that kind of gets around it, but one of the things I kind of look at in terms of when bringing a client on board is, if your information is working now, why are you talking to us? Because there's two scenarios, right? Like, they've got really good content that's working for them, and they've got content which isn't. So they think that putting it onto the different platform will solve the issue. Well, they've got content that works, and they think, why don't we amplify on a different platform? And so it doesn't quite work that way, because you're trying to mix a few different levels of marketing. Whereas if you start from, you know, again, back to the pyramid that we look at, it's like, well, let's look at your overall strategy. And then if the overall strategy is to get leads, then we go down to the next level, like, well, okay, you're using Facebook really well. You've got this content which is killing it on Facebook. If we go back and say, well, if we look at another platform, is it going to have the same result? Yes or no? And then building it down that way, we might, you know, have to change it or even create new content just to do cold email specifically. It's such a different platform to like the ad platforms and stuff like that. It's kind of typically like creating content for clients, because then we know everything's within our control, essentially.
I love the idea. This is pretty much saying that, hey, he's been working on Instagram. That doesn't really mean he's going to work the same way on YouTube, or you're going to need the same approach. And that's true. Cold email is just a different channel that requires, you know, a different approach, depending also on your audience and way of consuming the information. It's a good point.
Will, help me out. When you say you'll go ahead and create some content for a client, are we mostly talking about making case studies or like before and after type content, or is it something completely different?
It really comes down to client by client, because some clients might actually have some really good assets. Like, look, we'll just take this and just repurpose it. Some of them might have, you know, a good blog, for example, but the market doesn't read blogs. It depends. We've created case studies. We've helped create some video scripts for clients where, you know, hey, here's a script for you to say, just look at the camera, say this stuff. We're going to use it for cold emails. It really does vary. I mean, we've helped clients create physical letters that we send out as well. So it really just depends on what they need and how their market kind of likes to consume.
So Will, of all the channels that you are running campaigns for, is cold email still the bread and butter, or is there, I don't know, a new channel that you're been recommending to more business owners?
Yeah, cold email is still 80% of what we do. It's still by far the most effective platform, but we're starting to test supplementing cold email. So for example, if we've got a cold email list, we might come back onto LinkedIn and plug that list into LinkedIn and run ads to that exact list. So we're experimenting with, you know, going cross platforms. Obviously, if it's something that we can drive people through to, we'll pixel them as well. So cold email, I'll drive them through to an asset we've got online, hit them with a pixel, and then we can retarget on Google or, you know, Facebook as well. Experiment with all different types of platforms.
I mean, okay, so it varies by industry, by client, by product. Yeah.
I'm curious about the books you have behind. From the cover, I can't read it, but I'm pretty sure this is Influence, right?
Influence, yeah.
It's such a great book. I mean, we're big fans here of Influence.
Yeah, I've got mostly business books. I've got another bookshelf that you can't see as well. If there's one thing that I love collecting, it's books. I'm a huge fan of books. So mostly business stuff. I've got a lot of Tim Ferriss. I don't know. That's all Tim Ferriss stuff there, like his entire collection.
Oh, man, you've been buying his like Tribe of Mentors or something like that.
Yeah, Tribe of Mentors, Tools of Titans. It just goes everywhere. But I'm a huge Tim Ferriss fan, so whatever. Support him. Drink the Kool-Aid.
I was honestly very disappointed by this book. As soon as I bought it, I say, what did I buy? Because obviously,
which one are you talking about?
Tribe of Mentors. This is such a ripoff. It's just basically the guy doing some surface level interview with some super broad generic question that will lead to absolutely zero insight. Just ask everyone he knows of his pal, you know, that are high profile, if they can just answer those questions in an email. Boom, here's your book, and then everyone buying it. I'm like, damn, I just want a refund. So if Tim Ferriss, if you're listening to this cast, please send me a refund. I'm happy to give you back the book. It's untouched.
Hey, you know what?
Anyway, that was my 2 seconds.
That was massive rant. It's all right, Tim. I still love you.
Yeah, you can still come on a show. That's fine. That's fine.
Okay, so this is the trick with like Tools of Titans. What's the other one called? Tribe of Mentors, Tools of Titans. Those two books are very similar, right? Like almost exactly the same book. So I paid him twice for the same thing, but all good. Here's how I actually got the value out of it. I picked on the people that I actually wanted to learn from and the people that I said, these guys are amazing, and ignored everyone else. And in those interviews, I didn't even read the interviews. I just went down to the question, like, what books do you recommend? What are your top books?
That makes
sense. And I said, oh, okay. Yeah, if these are your top books and I love the way you think, let me get these books as well.
It's a very expensive referral list. Yes, for sure.
Pretty much.
So give us some of your favorites, Will. What other books do you read?
I've got a whole bunch of copywriting books. So the one where I've got the Avengers Endgame DVD on, that's my copywriting shelf. Yep. Those two are my copywriting shelves. What else have I got? I've got a whole bunch of generalized thinking. I've actually started getting
What's your more, copywriting book?
I've got so many, to be honest. I love the old school stuff. Eugene Schwartz, John Cardinal, all of those. Like the old school stuff is just the classics for a reason. Like they just don't get old. You know, I just love looking at really good copy. So I've got a whole bunch of them. I've got some new books here as well. I've got Deep Work is one of my favorites so far. So every single new employee. No, you don't like it?
We don't have the same taste.
No, we definitely don't. I actually send this to every single employee who actually starts with us.
So cool. Well, maybe you want to explain just in a few sentences before I do what's the book is about.
I think as a high-level operator, as a copywriter, and someone who's trying to run a business, my biggest problem was, how do I find the time to write really good copy, right? Especially because I'm still doing all of the copy for clients. I haven't outsourced it. I don't think I will because I really enjoy it. I think it keeps me sharp. But the problem was between emails and my team, like, hey, Will, so how do we do this? I never get enough time to write the copy well. So when I got that book, the thing was like, well, it wasn't that, you know, he spent like 3/4 of the book selling me the idea of deep work. I didn't need that. Like I knew it's what I needed, but I just like the little strategies he's got in place to actually help you do that. So I think for my employees though, they're so used to getting emails all the time that I wanted them to understand you don't have to respond to every single email within the minute that I actually send it to you. You can tell me, hey, I need to focus on this task and I'm going to go and spend, you know, half a day doing it. Yeah. I think that's why, yeah, that's the stuff that I kind of like. But Jerry, yeah,
that's good. No, that is good. And no, I think the idea is very simple and good. It's a good idea, obviously, deep work. I think I got a problem with this book more about the ego of the actual writer and how he sort of like, I invented this thing. It's like, dude, I've been coding for more than 20 years and deep work was my day in, day out. So it's not a novel idea, but fair enough. You know, he's just surfing the wave. It's a good concept for. I'm the official basher, you know, kind of.
Hey, like, this is great.
He does have an ego. Like,
no, that's why we have this yin and yang. Jeremy, you keep it real, and I have to get better at just being like, yeah, that's good.
Fair enough.
Any other last recommendations for the listeners? Try and follow in your footsteps here. How do we think like Will?
You probably don't. My brain goes everywhere. I think one of the things I've started to realize is that the way I've seen some of the best marketers work and get the results is just having a unique way of thinking about things. So yes, it's good to have templates and formulas and everything like that, but the real results are the things that move the needle. It isn't modeling what someone else is doing. It's bringing your own flair, bring your own flavor and way of thinking. So I think the way I look at it is if I can go deep and master certain elements of copywriting, I'm going to get so many ideas and thoughts and angles from that that I can apply to everything else. And you know, I think Jay Abraham, the stuff he talks about is fairly shallow, but the concept I think that he nails really well is just cross-pollinating ideas. So, for example, I'll take ideas from the SaaS space, software space, and apply it to more traditional business. Or,
love it.
Yeah, just taking different ideas from different areas and combining it and with my own experiences and what happens. So I don't think anyone should necessarily copy what I do or think the way I do, because you know, my brain works the way it does for me, but it might not be right for someone else.
It's super well said. And actually, I think this is very something profound here, that uniqueness actually comes after a lot of time of doing one thing. Like, you know, for example, you've been doing cold email for a very long time and therefore you sort of like developed your own style. It's like the same for copywriting, for everything. And people who keep switching from the next shiny thing to the next shiny thing actually will never reach the point where they can provide some sort of like uniqueness to one thing. So yeah, it's a great reminder. Thanks for that.
I think that the best story around that is, I know that you guys love Japan, but in Japan, right, if you have a look at the documentary, Jiro Loves Sushi.
Yeah.
Like that guy's, you know, he's 90 years old now. He still does sushi. Like he still does his thing. And he's world famous, documentary is being made. He hasn't, you know, gone and tried, oh, I'm going to make sushi today. I'm going to try and do, you know, I'm going to do ramen tomorrow. Like, you know, sushi is his thing. So it's mastery.
Do you know how much it costs to actually go on his table? Well, it's not really a table even, actually. It's a bar.
I've heard it's what, 500?
It's about like $300 a seat, yeah. Oh, and you have to pay like 3 months in advance or something like that.
That's not too bad.
No, it's actually affordable.
For the number one sushi master in the world.
It's not too bad for someone who's dedicated 80 years of their entire existence to this craft, right?
Yeah.
It's a great way.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, Will, I'm really in awe of your ability to cross channels and still be highly effective in marketing. I mean, if I met another person who was, you know, top 1% in more than two channels, I'm just, you know, dumbfounded. It's amazing. And so I'm really listening when you say that you block off an entire day Friday to learn and to see what's new out there, because it certainly paid off. I mean, you know, think about the sushi master who has just done sushi and excelled. You've managed to do that with a couple different channels. So, you know, hats off, man. That's amazing.
Thanks, man. Look, I think that's what it looks like from the outside, but the true secret to it is I got good at one thing and I bring support for everything else. So my whole thing is copy. Like, I don't do many things in life well, but I do copy decently, right? So yeah. If I can use copy principles, it doesn't matter what channel that I go to, I've got the right good principles around copy. Then all I need to do is bring in someone who's smarter than me at Facebook ads or LinkedIn ads, or, you know, I've got teams who can build funnels for me. But if I can get the copy working well, it just goes across all different channels and it works well. So I think, you know, rather than being good at channels, I'm actually good at copy. And that kind of lends itself to makes it a little bit easier. I don't think I could be, you know, if I was like, I'm the Facebook expert, I don't think I could pivot and go, now I'm the LinkedIn expert. I'm going to do both well. So I kind of chose a fundamental skill and applying that to everything that we do.
Well said. So listeners, go master copywriting. It will pay off. Will, let's tell our listeners where to get some more from you. So I know you've got Growth Labs and you've got contentdrivenbusiness.com, but do you have a mailing list that you encourage people to check out for more really good tips? I mean, where can we go for more?
Or your next speaking gig?
We're in a pretty weak climate, so there's not really any speaking gigs happening.
That's true, yeah, actually.
There was a couple of big speaking gigs in the US that were kind of on my radar, but they've all been canceled. So bit of a weird time. But if they want more info in terms of general business thinking and general thinking around marketing, Growth Labs is the best way to go. There's an email list on that. You can join that. And, you know, so every week I publish not necessarily marketing ideas, but even general business ideas. Whereas on the other side, Content Driven Business is where we dive into templates or campaigns we've got that's really working well. And, you know, we have a members area where we actually share the exact templates and go deep into teaching. But if they just want to join the list every now and again, we share templates on there as well.
Well said. So guys, that's growthlabswithaz.com. Go check out Will and more of his insights into marketing and sales and copywriting.
Thanks, Will.
Sweet. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's been awesome.
Our pleasure.
Hey, cold emailer.
Yeah, you.
If you got some value from this episode, give us a high five by sharing a 2-sentence review on iTunes.
Or Stitcher, or TuneIn, that works too.
It's a quick way to help other growth-minded folks like us find this podcast.
So they can send awesome emails.
And make everyone's inbox a better place. Thanks.